The views expressed on The Final Straw Radio do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, Friends of Community Radio, or any of the affiliate radio stations airing the show. You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough, your host for today. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRSLP in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. If you care to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. This show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. A link to Firestorm's partial catalog of books and zines, plus like featured content, and a link to their full calendar of events can be found online at their website, firestorm.coop. This week, I spoke with Heather Doyle, who is an environmental activist with the Seed Coalition out of the Midwest, among other places. We spoke about the Seed Coalition and about extraction in the Midwest, resource extraction, specifically in Cove Point in southern Maryland, right outside of Washington, D.C. If you are interested in hearing more or reading more about her case, you can follow the links at seedcoalition.wordpress.com, or if you're interested in getting in touch with them, because they are looking to talk to people who are facing extraction in their environments around the country, you can get in touch with them via that website as well. Again, that website is seedcoalition.wordpress.com. This is just an announcement on behalf of the Kansas City Food Not Bombs chapter. Quote, "We, the Kansas City, Missouri chapter of Food Not Bombs, announce a general call-out for a Food Not Bombs Global Day of Solidarity on April 3, 2016. Our pursuit is a united demonstration of agency across the planet, linking group to group to intensify our organization. Our aim is twofold: to demonstrate our continued effectiveness as a methodology of affirmative struggle toward the depricing of basic necessities and services, and to celebrate ourselves, our powers, our differences, and desires expressed through over three decades of tradition and organization geared towards health, care, rest, and the transformative force of nurturing in common. To the nations and state forms reproducing the military-industrial complex through drone strikes, arms development, and counterintelligence, yet refuse to foster budgetary expense toward the feeding and well-being of their own peoples. Food Not Bombs is your imminent resistance. It is your very condition that compels us." The question was once asked by some of our European comrades, how do we find each other? Food Not Bombs is our answer, one answer among many. In the statist compositions of the new global movement of urban enclosure, our condition, as much as those we serve, might best be described somehow between surplus population and insufficient funds. Becoming surplus, becoming precarious, becoming lumpen, is our common negation, or rather our shared separation. For example, the push to instantiate new feeding bans still persists across nations, 27 cities in the U.S. alone. And yet, even the most conservative statistics estimate that a little under half of all food priced for sale is thrown out as waste, still edible, but unsold. Here is capitalist state logic at its finest. It is only at the point when there is enough food to go around for free that the opportunities to serve it should be foreclosed upon. We must carve our reasons from their unreason. Food Not Bombs has always radicalized this desire, beyond demand and beyond right, to meet the necessity of food towards health, and in our organizational solidarity, we intend to celebrate the giving and taking care of one another through free meals, free produce, free shelter, free association, and the permanent recreation of liberation. So for the freaks and for the wanderers, workers and work refusers, the incarcerated and still liberating, hustlers, queers, dreamers, realists, impossibilists, activists and inactivists, the violent, the tender, the wild and more wild, we reach out in comradely friendship and admiration for solidarity on April 3rd. Make food, not bombs. Make class war, not war. Yours, Kansas City, Missouri. For more on Food Not Bombs, you can do a simple search for that title, and many, many resources will be at your fingertips. So I am speaking with Heather Doyle, who works with, is it accurate to say that you work with the Seed Coalition?
Yes.
In Cove Point?
We're mid-Atlantic based.
Cool. And we're here to talk about Seed and Cove Point and a company called Dominion Resources and a little bit about some legal cases that are going on. Would you mind describing your case a little bit for listening audiences?
Sure. Like you mentioned, I work with a group called Seed Coalition, and Seed is an acronym for Stopping Extraction and Exports Destruction. We're a direct action-based campaign, and most of our work in the last several years has been resisting the fracked gas export facility that Dominion Resources is trying to build on the western shore of the Chesapeake Bay at Cove Point in so-called Maryland or occupied Piscataway territory.
Mm-hmm.
So my current legal case stems from a action that me and another folk did last February in 2015. And in that action, we trespassed on one of the construction sites for the export terminal and climbed a crane. And the other climber went up the arm of the crane and hung a banner. So it was just basically just calling awareness to both the export facility being built there and calling for an end to it. Like, no liquid natural gas exports anywhere, no fracking in Maryland or anywhere at all, because we're against fossil fuel extraction.
Mm-hmm.
So with that action, we were arrested, and our legal has been resolved from that portion of our case. But during the arrest, we were severely mistreated by the Calvert County Sheriff's Office, which was the responding law enforcement. We're experienced climbers. We have a lot of technical knowledge, and we know how to do what we do safely. But the response was definitely done in a fast, haphazard, and in a very risky way. So our lives were put in danger, as well as the lives of the responding officers. They put themselves in danger during the extraction process. And I was at the base of the crane, and I was belaying the climber at the top. But during my detainment and arrest, I was assaulted by one of the sheriffs. He pushed his forearm into my throat, not once but twice, while my arms were being held back by two other responding officers. And then after he had done that, he lifted up his boot and pressed his foot down into my chest, into my sternum, like it was feeling like he was going to crack my chest. Mm-hmm. And then he eventually relented, and they took me down the crane. So that happened during our arrest, and me and the other person who were involved in it, we didn't want to speak out about it for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, one being we expect cops to, you know, treat us in this way. But also we had an ongoing legal situation, and we feared that if we spoke about it, that there'd be repercussions on our cases. So, and also we wanted to keep the focus on the issue that we're fighting, which mm-hmm. is stopping the construction of this fracked gas export facility, because that's why we're there and that's why we did what we did. After our other legal was resolved, both the other climber and I pled out to a misdemeanor trespass charge. And after we were sentenced, we released public statements just saying what had happened to us. And our aim in that was to bring awareness to this pattern of police misconduct and intimidation that had been happening around the ongoing protests around this facility. One thing that is important to know about this case is that Dominion Resources has, well, they've bought off, you know, all of the all of the county government, like you might expect that they would. But one thing that's unique is how open they are about their partnership and their buy-off of the Calvert County Sheriff's Office. There's documentation, which is hard to get, but folks were able to secure some documentation that speaks directly to the financial relationship between Dominion Resources and the Sheriff's Office. So basically, Dominion pays $1.25 million a year to the Calvert County Sheriff's Office to basically be at their beck and call whenever they want. It finances several sheriff's salaries, and they've also done a lot of other things, like they've bought the Calvert County Sheriff's boat with a bunch of machine guns mounted to it, and done other sorts of given other gifts that have helped militarize their police force. So I think that for those of us who have been involved in resistance around other extraction struggles, like we know, like the corporations and the cops are in collusion with one another. But one thing that's unique about this situation is that they're proud of it and they're very open about it. They think it's the greatest thing ever. That, like, isn't it great that this corporation is going to foot the bill in this county that is not a well-funded county in the first place? So the fact that they're very open about the whole agreement and they don't seem to see that there's like any problem with that at all,
yeah,
is a big part of it.
That's totally incredible. Like I've heard of companies buying property rights, mm-hmm, for, you know, in farmland, for example, like buying up the property rights for farms, but they not to the tune of couple million dollars. It's usually the tune of like 15 grand or something like that.
Yeah. So it's $1.25 million allocated. And, you know, they say, we don't know where that's going, but it's pretty obvious it's going to the sheriff's office. And in addition to that, a lot of the sheriffs have been working off-duty shifts as Dominion contractors. So they're double dipping. And also another incident that happened after my arrest is there was an incident where some of our activists were being tailed going to a community event, mm-hmm, and the cops that pulled them over had badges that on one side said Calvert County Sheriff's Office and the other said Dominion Security. So it's just like, I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. Let's just say, like, the Calvert County Sheriff's Office has a lot of personal and institutional interest in doing whatever they can do to keep Dominion on schedule, building their facility, and suppress any sort of dissent that's going on around this. So with that in mind, what happened with my case is after we spoke out about everything, this is a very rural county. It made the big news. It made like the front page of the newspaper. It was on the radio show that everyone listens to while they're driving to work in the morning. And, you know, even the head sheriff called into the radio station because they were starting this whole conversation about, oh, people alleging police misconduct. And yeah, and all this information that I have is what people have told me, because when I pled out, I went to jail at the Calvert County Detention Center for 33 days. So all this information that I was getting was just like talking to my friends whenever I was able to call them. So during the course of that time, it was expressed to me by the folks I was working with that they were strongly encouraging me to go ahead and file an official complaint. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't really thought about doing it before. I don't, you know, personally think it like ever really leads to anything. And I feel like most of the time when people file complaints about assault, they are further violated. But I recognize that in this struggle that we're a part of, you know, we're also working with a lot of community members who like definitely have different perspectives on law enforcement. And also there's this part of how it gets played out in the media, mm-hmm, and this public perception of things, and it seemed useful, and I trusted the folks I was talking to, like, it made sense for us to to take this step. So I went ahead. It was, like, very weird. I mean, and, like, talk about, like, my privilege and that, like, I was able to file this complaint while I was incarcerated. And I mean, I wasn't super scared that anything was going to happen to me because there were a lot of people looking out for me. But it was pretty bizarre to do that. So I went ahead and filed a formal complaint, did an interview with the internal affairs detective, and just really thought nothing would come of it. But it was just like, at least, like, we put it out there, and that was just going to be that. So I got out of jail, and a couple months went by, and I learned that they had not only found my complaint to be unvalidated, imagine that, but also that they had decided to charge me with a new misdemeanor, which is false statement to police officer.
Specifically regarding the complaint of misconduct?
Yes. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So if I had just put out the public statement and not done anything else, like, it's whatever.
Yeah.
But the fact that I filed the official complaint is what brought them on. But in how everything has gone down, and along with me, the other activist who was on the crane also filed a complaint, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And in just the time that's elapsed between now and then, it's just like, it feels like a very calculated, we basically just stepped right into, like, a trap of letting them, you know, build a new case against me. It's like a new way to intimidate us and a new way to make us pour our resources into fighting this,
right,
and to try to scare us. So yeah, that's what's happened. My charges were filed in July, and I've been in and out of court a couple of times since then,
mm-hmm,
and finally coming through to, I'm anticipating going to jury trial on May 3rd and 4th.
This year?
Yeah, in 2016. So I'll be in the Calvert County Circuit Court, and it'll be a jury trial. That's where we're at.
Yeah. Are you wanting any folks to come up for support for that?
Yeah. I'd love support in the courtroom. I think it would be super helpful for people to see that it's also not that there's anything wrong with this at all, but that it is, like, there is, like, a larger network and that they're messing with with something a lot bigger.
Definitely.
You know, when this whole issue came up, there had never been any sort of protest activity in this county. This is a place that's not used to this at all, which is, like, part of the reason that I think they responded to us so forcefully and to other people who have been involved in arrest or even just expressed dissent by, like, putting a bumper sticker on their car that was anti-Dominion.
Yeah, I know. And and also the like, high financial stakes would seem, I mean, nothing makes people, like, nasty faster than money.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people get so divided so quickly if, like, such high stakes money is involved and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So this protest was against an LNG or liquid natural gas pipeline?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, so what they're building at Cove Point is a liquefied natural gas export facility.
Okay.
So all the gas that would be coming there, it's all the frack gas that would be coming down from the Marcellus and the Utica Shale through pipelines that include actually a pipeline that's going through North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
All that gas would be then being shipped out to Japan and India. So the project is due to come online now. Their construction has been delayed by a number of things, but I think at this point it's due to come online in early 2018.
Gotcha.
So
are you, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but I'm really curious about if you could go back and do it again, would you file a complaint against the police?
Definitely not.
No.
I mean, I think this, like, it's a complicated question to answer because, yeah, I've been thinking about this for a while. You know, obviously my life would not have been affected, or, like, I don't want to say completely controlled by this, but it's definitely shifted things a lot for me. I've had to spend most of this year putting money together to pay my lawyer, and I've been really blessed with a network of people who are fortunate to have financial resources, and even folks who don't, but, like, understand how this goes and want to be supportive. So that's definitely impacted my life in a lot of ways. I think that So just from a personal perspective, yeah, like, of course, I wouldn't do that again. And also just in terms of where my politics are, I, you know, think it's just like more interaction with the state really opens us up to more and more ways that they can control us. I feel embarrassed about this case actually a lot in that respect, because it definitely doesn't align with my politics or even like my personal experiences. Something that's hard for me to talk about, but something that has come up with the case is about several years ago, before I was really politicized as an anarchist, I experienced a sexual assault with an employer. And the more that I talked to my community, the more I found that this person had this pattern of doing this, and people wanted me to file reports with the police. And again, like, this is hard for me to talk about because, well, for a lot of reasons, because yeah, it's a sexual assault, but also, like, I guess, like, I'm just willing to be vulnerable about that because, like, I mean, I, like, fear a lot of judgment about, like, why, you know, why the hell would you talk to the f-ing cops? I don't know. I'm just trying to be, like, honest about, like, my evolution of, you know, like, even after that experience, I knew all it did was leave me feeling more violated. And like, that's buried in my memory. And somehow, like, in this situation, I didn't get reminded of that. And I think it's just been important for me to think about this balance of like shorter term goals, or especially if I'm part of a campaign that's doing openly arrestable actions and things like that. And the way that so much of what we do is about the media perception or the public perception of the things that we're doing, like being really open about those things and writing the, you know, the reactions of everything. I think even being in a cage, I was like still swept up in that. But on a different level, I understand now that this case has, and I think this is what makes it easier to bear, or like helps me deal with this, even though I'm exhausted and tired of it, and is that it's part of this bigger shift that's been going on down in Calvert County. It was like, people are realizing the cops aren't there to protect them. They're there to protect this corporation. And if they start to do anything that opposes that or jeopardizes that project, the state is going to come down on them because of that. And I think that that's, you know, for a lot of the folks that we're working with, like, that's been, well, then, like, what the hell are we supposed to do? You know, who is there to, like, protect us? Who is there to fight for us? They're in this, like, shit situation. And I think that I can see the longer arc of how this experience is shifting people's perspectives, and people are thinking about different ways that they're organizing and building power, and also questioning authority. And certainly, just to say, it's not only my case that has given them that perspective, because there's been a lot of other stuff that's gone on. But I think that I can recognize and understand it's like we're working with a larger resistance of people coming from lots of different backgrounds. And I can understand that, like, there's value in going through this experience for them. One thing that also is true, it's like I said before, it's been really hard to get some of information because they justify not releasing stuff through Public Information Act requests under the guise of Homeland Security and stuff like that. You know, there's an opportunity because I'm entitled to a, you know, the due process of law or whatever, that my lawyer is trying to zealously defend me. And some of that includes proving the bias that exists and like the reasons that, you know, the only reason that I'm in this situation is a completely political case. I mean, of course, I like have a politics and understand that I think all prisoners are political prisoners. But this case is like an overtly, it's the state colluding with Dominion, and that bias is like is perfectly clear even in the amount of time and energy they've spent on my case. I think any person could look at that and be like, that's how they're spending their county resources, like digging up all this dirt. Or there's stuff in my case where it's like I said, you know, it says in the case like, oh, I sat down, they made me sit in the mud, and they're like, well, the ground was frozen, so like that's how you're, that's part of your false statement. She's like, that's what they're spending their time doing. So There's so much to talk about with this. I think it's just to say there's an opportunity to like uncover more of this relationship. Mm-hmm. And I see value in that going through the case. I also see that Dominion doesn't want light on anything. They hate bad press. They don't want anything out there. And they've been getting a lot of bad press lately about all sorts of stuff. The coal ash spill, they had an oil spill into the Potomac, the bribery that exists, especially in the Virginia government. So even just keeping their name out there is helpful. And honestly, one of the community residents we work with says there's this weird respect for authority down there in Calvert, and it keeps people from being able to maybe recognize or maybe just speak up because they feel pretty powerless. So not saying that I'm changing that, because I think it's a piece of a puzzle.
Yeah.
And then if they're treating me that way in that situation, I was in a situation where I was alone on this crane. There's no video footage. It was sort of around dawn, so mm-hmm. the light wasn't great. There's no one on scene except for a bunch of workers and the sheriffs. And, you know, I was like, they could do what, literally, you know, for me, it was just like, wow. What was more scary is, first of all, I'm a pretty small person and I'm a woman and I'm being pinned down by men, and there's like this huge man standing over me. It's just really scary.
That's terrifying.
And terrifying on so many different levels. Literally anything could happen to me. Mm-hmm. And they can say whatever they want about it. I have the feelings that I have about police, but these reforms are like this idea that you should be able to make a citizen complaint and not fear retribution is still a piece of a puzzle to maybe getting to a different point. And if I just like feel like with the privileges that I hold and the resources that I have access to, like it's important for me to fight that mm-hmm. because what happens to like the next person that does that. And, and also if those sheriffs are doing that to me, can you imagine how violent they are to other folks? You know, it just feels like. So I guess that was like the really, really, really long answer to argue. Like, do you wish you hadn't done it? It's like, yes, I do personally, but mm-hmm. I also recognize that there's more at stake than that.
And definitely, and there's something you said at the beginning of all of that, which was, I thought, really, really reasonable, because mm-hmm. given the fact that like solidarity in battles like this, like sometimes looks really, really complicated mm-hmm. because like group dynamics are always complicated and people are bringing all these sorts of stuff to the table. And you said something about there are people in my group that have like different relationships to authority mm-hmm. and had to take media into account, had to take all of these things into account. So like making the complaint made sense at the time. And mm-hmm. I think that that's legit. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and it's really cool that also that this is becoming part of the wider discourse. Mm-hmm. The complete, you know, I mean, police corruption is whatever, like that's a buzzword, that's a media buzzword, but mm-hmm. how everybody's in each other's pockets and mm-hmm. being, you know, how there's no like isolated series of circumstances in this situation. And it's really cool that people are talking about that. Mm-hmm. As far as the like police being in total thrall or in the pay of larger companies like this, it stands to reason that it's happening in other places, but have you like heard of any other instances of this happening?
Well, it definitely is happening in other places. Like I said, Cove Point or like Calvert County is unique in that they're very excited to tell the world about their agreement.
Oh, God.
which, you know, I don't know, we're definitely, they've opened themselves up in a certain way that way. But I know, you know, for instance, I know a lot of folks who are at the tar sands blockade when they're trying to build the southern half of the KXL pipeline. And most of the security for the company that is building that were off-duty cops. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a bigger pattern. And I don't have any other examples. We'll definitely continue to see more and more of this as extraction like proliferates across the continent.
I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. And it's been happening for a long time, I should say. Like this is like one example I know of, and
for sure.
And definitely a lot of other people have like already experienced it. Like
speaking of extraction, among other like mm-hmm. awesome topics, You described a little bit about Dominion's plans for Cove Point, the liquid natural gas distro center. And you talked a little bit about its timeline, but I was wondering if you could go into it just a little bit more, like the mechanics of what's going on down there.
Sure. So one thing to know about the LNG facility at Cove Point is there is actually a facility already in place. It was built as an import facility back in, I might mess this up. I think it was in the 70, the 60s or the 70s. And then it's actually not ever really been used. They've done like the minimum amount of shipments to keep it open, but it's never really been in use. So a lot of people, when they hear about this, they're like, well, it's already there. Like, what are y'all complaining about? You know, maybe you chose to live there anyway. It just didn't seem like a threat because it was not being used. So, but with the fracking boom and the spin around how clean natural gas is, or
It has the word natural in it.
Sure. They hatched the scheme to move it over. They say it's going to be an import-export facility, but it's really just being retrofitted for the export facility. Something that happened, so this facility is like built in the middle of a, like literally in the middle of a residential community. Right across the front gate from this facility, there's people, like families living in homes directly across the road. And it's right across from a couple of different parks. And it's also 3 miles down the bay from a nuclear power plant. So this thing should never have, well, I don't think it should have ever been built in the first place, but it's also built within an actual community. So what's going on right now, basically the whole approval process was done behind closed doors. All the county employees had to, they got some cash in their pockets, and or like the commissioners did, and then almost everyone had to sign non-disclosure agreements about it. So by the time the public found out about it, it was like already way past where they could like delay it by a lot of the traditional tactics that we're seeing in terms of delaying other facilities right now. And it was on its way to approval with FERC, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. So in general, this fight has been a lot of running to catch up because they got a huge head start on us. But in terms of what the project is they've built a pier down at Solomon's Island, which is about 6 miles down the main road through town. And what they're doing is a lot of the equipment for the facility is being built on the Gulf Coast, and then they ship it around and up to Norfolk, Virginia Beach, and then it's pulled up the on a barge by tugboat up the Chesapeake Bay to this pier. So that is one site that they constructed. And what ends up happening when they have to haul this huge equipment up the road, they close down half of this main thoroughfare through the county. And so it's like only one lane, one direction of traffic. And they a heavy haul this stuff all the way up this road and then down the small two-lane road with like no shoulder several miles to the facility. And one thing that has happened, so this is on the Chesapeake Bay, the peninsula that this facility is on, when they actually have to haul the stuff down the road, they close off the roads and there's no other road through. So it's for like about 1,000 people that on this peninsula. So they're just caught. They're either stuck in their homes or they can't go home for some one of these heavy hauls. And they have over 50 of these planned. And they're sort of in the middle of that process, I think. And they were originally going to do it only at night, but now they're doing it pretty much anytime they want. So they have to have an ambulance and a fire truck stationed beyond this blockade in case someone has an emergency. And there have already been reports of people who are like needing to go get medical attention who've been stuck because they're hauling the shit down the road. So that's one part of what's happening. There's also another offsite area, which is actually where we did our action, where they cut down about 98 acres of old growth forest to basically make a huge parking lot for their employees and some huge storage areas because they can't store so much stuff on the site, on the main site. So something else to know about the main site is when it was constructed, because it was constructed in a residential facility, there was agreements made with the Sierra Club where they were like, you cannot expand the footprint of this facility ever. And so they've had to work with these parameters. So that's part of the reason that there's this other offsite area where the employees park, and then they get shuttled down the road, mm-hmm. down this small two-lane road, like 24/7 to work at this facility. What it's meant is that instead of in other LNG facilities across the globe, this is like done in a much more remote area and across a bigger distance. But what's happened with this facility, because they can't expand their footprint, is that everything's being contracted to this really small space, which makes it even more dangerous. So they're trying to build basically everything on top of one another. And just so you know, like, this type of LNG facility has never been built in such a populated area anywhere in the world. This is like a really big deal. Not that I think that it should be built anywhere, but, you know, in a community where there's like 30,000 people living in the southern part of Calvert County, which, by the way, Dominion didn't count. They said there were 3,000 people living in this area, but there's actually 30,000 in southern Calvert County. So
just drop a zero off that.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know how they got away with that. And they're just, I mean, they're like building these gigantic structures. They're going to be storing over 400,000 gallons of propane there, as well as billions of cubic feet of liquid natural gas. The Dominion has built what they call a sound wall, which I think they really mean is like a blast wall. It's 60 mm-hmm. feet. It's still not high enough. You can still see the huge storage units above it.
Is that to like keep the eyesore down, or is that a safety precaution?
At first they said it was a sound wall to keep the sound down, which, by the way, they're violating all the sound regulations. And it's just, these people are like living out in this rural area, but it feels like an industrial zone just landed. If you're driving in from like the other county, like going over the Patuxent River or something like that, you can just see this one area of light glowing. It's a mammoth operation. But so then they disclose, sorry to go back to the wall, then they disclose, well, it's actually a blast wall in case there was a catastrophic failure. Other engineers have looked at this and been like, this blast wall isn't going to do crap if there's actually a catastrophic failure. In fact, the wall will actually act as shrapnel just blow into folks' homes. Of course, if there was a catastrophic failure, it wouldn't really matter, because it would create a vapor cloud that would lead to a flash fire that would basically instantly incinerate anyone in 0.8 miles around this facility. And that's about 1,000 folks. Everything would just melt away.
Yeah, and given that there's a nuclear power plant down the street, I mean, it just sounds like a Three Mile Island waiting to happen or something like that.
Absolutely. And before, when I talked about those other people that would be stuck in the peninsula, well, this road that passes right by the front gate is the only way out. And if there was a catastrophic failure, that road would be melted away. People would just be stuck on the peninsula. They wouldn't be able to get out. So that would be trapping another 1,000 folks. The evacuation area would include about 8,000 people, but you'd be dealing with a huge fireball. And when these things explode, and they have before,
right.
And to me, it feels like it's only a matter of time, because I think that so many of us seen all this like fracas infrastructure is being built really quick. There's really not a whole lot of oversight. They're just trying to get stuff done so they can make their dollar before like this, you know, before it's not the prices plummet or whatever else.
This sounds like a horrific process, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
It sounds like it's going to turn this like, sort of seaside-y little Massachusetts town into...
Oh, it's in Maryland.
It's in Maryland.
Yeah,
seaside-y little Maryland town into an extraction mm-hmm. town of late capitalism.
Yeah.
It just sounds horrifying.
Yeah. And just to be clear, there wouldn't be extraction happening there. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, then there's already tons going on in Pennsylvania and West Virginia. And by the way, like, so we have a fracking moratorium in Maryland right now, and no one's going to be surprised if this facility comes online. Fracking will be, you know, permitted in Maryland.
Right.
So that'll just increase everything, although it's already really bad in many parts of West Virginia and Pennsylvania, as a lot of us know. But anyway, so worst case scenario, a lot of people are going to be incinerated or trapped. When these things have exploded before, what they do is just like let it burn down, because like you can't fight this thing. So Dominion totally downplays this. Of course they have to, because otherwise no one would be okay with this project being built. Lesby is the town that Cove Point is part of. Like, mm-hmm. Lesby is going to be a sacrifice zone just so Dominion can make some bucks, and the county is kicked a little bit, like a penance for having that in their county. The other thing to know is if everything works the way it's supposed to and there's like never any problems, this facility is still going to emit about 22.5 tons of pollutants into the air every year. And a lot of these are known carcinogens, so they're going to see a spike in childhood leukemia and asthma, and people are going to be eventually dying of all sorts of cardiovascular and respiratory illness. So that's the best case scenario, and they admit that that's the best case scenario.
Wow.
But the politicians around there like have no spines and won't do anything to stand up for their communities. It's all about money. They're like, yeah, money for the schools, and it's just like, okay, you're going to have a school full of sick children and no one will want to live there.
Yeah. So. And, like, your schools are going to be empty after the fifth grade, not to get macabre.
Yeah, for sure.
What is the demographic of Cove Point?
I'm not from Calvert County. I live I've lived mostly in the past several years in D.C., which is about an hour and a half from there. Mm-hmm. So I'm not the best person to talk to you about that. It's southern Calvert County is traditionally a more poor or working class or middle class place. There's definitely like people who move down there because they like also like commute into DC and They want to live by the water and stuff like that. But overall, it's still like it has a definitely rural character. It's not super fancy or anything like that. I don't know if I know super well to comment on the racial makeup of the area, but it's definitely a mix of white and black folks predominantly living down there. There is a lot of military nearby. A lot of the Calvert County Sheriff's Office, sheriffs are ex-military, but they're in nearby St. Mary's County. There's a big military installation. And in northern Calvert County, I believe, or just like a farther north up there, there's also some military installation. So a lot of people work with that, but also a lot of people, folks who used to make their living fishing or like watermen in the bay, although that's like definitely decreased. But it's mostly like, you know, folks who are wanting to like live rural, and it is a very quiet place, even as there are definitely a lot of people living around there.
And all of these things are scheduled to take place in 2017. Is that right?
I think that's the idea. I think they want to have this facility fully operational by 2018. So in terms of, there have been a lot of LNG facilities proposed to the federal government, to the U.S. federal government, and also the Canadian government. In the past several years, there's one that's already gone online and is now exporting gas out of the Gulf Coast, which there's so many permits they're fighting down there. It's really ridiculous and pretty sad. In terms of where Cove Point landed, it's sort of like third or fourth that got approved. I think the industry expects that, you know, of maybe several dozen permits, that maybe three or four are actually going to go through. And unfortunately, Cove Point was on that cusp. But there's also, from what we understand, there's a lot of volatility in terms of financial funding. Like, Dominion doesn't have money to finish this project, so it's relying on a lot of financing from different banks. But it seems like these investments are a little bit risky, or not a little bit risky, pretty risky at this point. And a lot of that has had to do with other, you know, manufactured geopolitical conflict. But it also, a lot of it has to do with like all these stalling mechanisms, because the thing is that all these projects like export facilities, compressor stations and pipelines and frack pads, they are all submitted in different permits.
Okay.
But like, you don't need, for instance, the Atlantic Sunrise Pipeline or the Atlantic Coast Pipeline or the Mountain Valley Pipeline, which are all pipelines that are going to be affecting the mid-Atlantic and down into the south here. Like, you don't need them if you're not going to actually export any gas. So there's been a lot of fighting those and a lot of stalling that, because folks are fighting those things. The companies are having to survey and use eminent domain to take people's land. And that's like definitely, or take the land that people are living on. And that's a pretty unpopular thing. And so there's been a lot of stalling, those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. But if those pipelines don't get built, where are they going to get the gas? Where are they going to get the frac gas to export?
Yeah, food for thought right there.
Yeah. So, you know, there's definitely some hope for stopping this. A lot of people are like, oh, the Cove Point permit is already, it's already been approved. It's a lost cause. But that doesn't help the people that are living there under, in the specter of this facility. And it's also like, we definitely don't think it's a done deal at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously there's like forest that's been destroyed. There's already a lot of scary things that have happened with cement trucks overturning and blocking the roads and debris falling off of trucks that are going in and out of this facility. And we also know that there's been a death of a worker on the site that Dominion's tried to keep very quiet. So all these things have definitely started happening. But I think that if this facility never comes online, we'll definitely count that as a success.
I also just want to point out that this company is called Dominion. you can't get any clearer than that, I think. Mm-hmm. And it also sounds that there's been a lot of, you know, targeted resistance against this initiative. And I was wondering if you would mind talking a little bit about SEED. When and how did it begin, and what are its main goals?
Yeah, SEED is an acronym for Stopping Extraction and Exports Destruction. It's a very epic
title.
So we're a group of folks primarily based in the Mid-Atlantic who engage in direct action against all these sorts of projects. And our focus has been on Cove Point, but it's very important to us. And I think a lot of us are motivated by the people that we know and the work that we've seen being done fighting fracking wells and fighting other sorts of extraction industry in places like rural places along the Marcellus Shale and in Appalachia. A lot of us come from a background of doing support work or engaging in other sorts of protest around mountaintop removal coal mining. And that's definitely like part of our lineage. And also other friends who have been fighting fracking, especially in Northeast Pennsylvania. It sort of grew out of as an offshoot of Chesapeake Earth First. Mm-hmm. And 2 years ago, in June of 2014, we had a action camp called Energy Exports Action Camp. And the group of people that came together to work on putting that whole thing together decided we really liked working with each other and we wanted to keep up that momentum. So that's what we've been working on.
If people want to learn more about SEED, they can go to, is it seedcoalition.wordpress.com?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So seedcoalition.wordpress.com. There's information about some of our past actions and other stuff going on with Cove Point, as well as a bit about my case. Mm-hmm. And you also can find SEED on Facebook.
Can people donate to your case via that website?
Yeah. At this point, it looks like we have fundraised almost enough money to pay my lawyer, who's working at a reduced fee for us.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
It's really incredible, like the amount of support we've gotten. So, of course, there's always, it costs a lot to get things through to trial. You know, there's probably going to be like different court fees and you have to pay to subpoena folks and to get documents and all that sort of stuff. So we might still have some additional expenses. And especially if I go back to jail, there's also being able to do some support in terms of putting money on my phone or something like that. So I would say at this point, like, folks can hold off. Like, I think we're doing okay. If people want to donate to SEED in general or to any of the groups that are fighting this facility, We Are Cove Point is sort of the radical end of things, and that creates more space for other people to participate in, like, We Are Cove Point.
Is that and does We Are Cove Point have a website?
Yeah, it's wearecovepoint.org.
Okay.
So We Are Cove Point is definitely a mix of folks who are concerned about extraction industry in general and also folks who are living in Lesbia or living close to the facility.
Gotcha.
So definitely, like, more support is always needed, but also, you know, there's a lot of really important struggles to be donating financial resources to.
Well, I mean, keep us updated on your trial. It's May 2nd and 3rd?
May 3rd and 4th.
May 3rd and 4th.
Yeah.
Apart from, like, just waiting on trial, what's next? What are you working on right now as far as your case goes or as far as the anti-extraction initiative goes?
Well, we're just trying to get the word out about what's going on with this case. So I'm definitely, like, interested in continuing to talk to people more about what's happening with this. And, you know, if nothing else, it's, like, definitely something to learn from, maybe for some folks.
I was wondering if there's, like, anything else you wanted or needed to add.
Sure. Yeah. I guess I would say that something that I think is a strength of the resistance going on at Cove Point is that we are really continue to try to bring the narrative back into focus that this is, like, part of a larger thing. And it's like, if you want gas exports through Cove Point, you're basically saying a big screw you to anyone who's living around a frack site. You're like, it's okay for you to get poisoned, for your community to get poisoned, for your water to be just totally toxic. You're saying it's okay that this is happening to people. Because we need to, like, bring this back to, like, these are people just trying to, like, live their lives that are going to be affected by this. And the only folks who really benefit are the folks who are working at these energy companies. So we are super interested in continuing to network and speak with people who are impacted by fracked gas infrastructure all along the East Coast and really all around the continent. So, like, definitely please get in touch with us through the SEED website or whatnot, or the We Are Cove Point website. We'd really like to continue to learn from other folks, too, and support other people in whatever resistance looks like to them.
So. Awesome.
And then I guess the only other thing to say, like, one thing that, like, the folks in Calvert County are really pushing for right now, there was never a quantitative risk assessment done for the facility, which is a tool that could be asked for by any politician in the Maryland state government or really anyone on the federal level. And that's, no one is thus far been willing to stick out their neck for that. So if people have connections with that, just to say, like, the Calvert Citizens for a Healthy Community, which is the local citizens group, that's what they're really pushing for. So if anyone has any ideas about how to support that or, like, help push that through, that would be like the least that could happen, because it's ridiculous that it hasn't gotten done yet.
So any environmental lawyers out there?
Oh yeah, definitely.
I'm looking at you.
Yeah, for sure. And then I don't know. I guess, like, I super appreciate folks' support and advice from dealing with this sort of situation. Yeah, please, just, like, we'll try to keep folks updated about my case and whatever all happens in the course of this trial. I guess this is, like, not a plug for me, but, like, one thing that happened for me is when I was incarcerated last spring, I had, like, an amazing amount of support, including, like, you know, it was, like, no big deal for me to, like, I didn't have to stress about money on my phone to be able to make calls or, like, on my books to buy the things that I needed. And also, I received, like, so many letters from all over the place. So I guess just maybe as a thing to say, like, in general, I encourage people, like, I know it's even the smallest thing that you can do, but really, and after I got out, I was able to, like, connect a lot of my friends who were interested in, like, continuing to correspond with the other folks that I was on block with in the detention center. So just, probably most folks listening to this will, like, understand this, but just, like, whatever you can do to, like, do, like, lend, like, some support to folks inside, whether they're overtly political prisoner or not, being able to write letters to folks and develop a, like, a longer term relationship, it, like, really means a big difference to
definitely
folks who are inside. So,
and then to anybody who just heard that, in Asheville we have a monthly prisoner letter writing night that is on the first Thursday of every month at Firestorm Books and Coffee.
Cool.
In West Asheville. Heather Doyle, thank you so much for coming on the air and talking about all that stuff. It was a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Not at all. And yeah, keep in touch and keep us updated.
Awesome.
You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough, your host for today. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRSLP in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. If you care to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. This show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. A link to Firestorm's partial catalog of books and zines, plus like featured content, and a link to their full calendar of events can be found online at their website, firestorm.coop. We've been speaking with Heather Doyle about the Seed Coalition and about extraction in Cove Point, Maryland. You can get in touch with her and the Seed Coalition at seedcoalition.wordpress.com. Plus, you can donate to that cause. Thanks for listening, and we will see you when we get back. To take us out, we are going to hear an older Thou track off of their album Peasant called The Work Ethic Myth.